Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. And we are live with a man who is at the middle of the action right now. Coach Red Pill is with us. Coach, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks very much for having me on, JF. Yeah.
So, although I hear a contrary on the internet, you are in Kiev right now.
Yes. there's some assholes are saying that I'm not here. This is the avenue perpendicular to Krishatik. I'm staying at the Premier Palace Hotel, and some assholes are claiming that I'm not in Kiev. It's so annoying, but it doesn't matter.
It absolutely looks authentic from what I can see from the window. What a wonderful architecture. Although, if you follow social media, you would think that all of this is getting carpet bombed at the moment. So how do you experience this, being in Kiev, when it seems that the kind of things we hear in the media seems to be building upon a World War III type of scenario?
Yeah, well, they're lying. And for reasons of their own, for their own money-making, they are lying about what's going on, and they're trying to make it seem that World War III is inevitable. I think they want it at some fundamental level. And to tell you the truth, I'm staying at the hotel where a lot of the press people are at, and I despise them. And I've had the opportunity to say so to their faces. It seems that they're just hell-bent for leather on, this happened for no reason whatsoever, you know, that kind of bullshit narrative. Mm-hmm. And I'm just completely opposed to that. What happened was imminently predictable. I didn't think it would happen when it happened, or else I wouldn't have come to Kiev. I would have stayed in Kharkov. But what happened is not, it didn't happen for no reason. You know, see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree. There's been a build up of this. And most importantly, perhaps I think that Coach will be coming back.
I can hear you. Go ahead. Sorry.
Most proximity to the events that have happened, what we have found is the America was behaving in every possible way as to invite almost Putin in. I didn't feel that there was a big motivation for this war not to happen.
The Ukrainians were led down the garden path. And basically, the Ukrainians were led down the garden path. The Europeans and the Americans promised them, you know, that at the end of the rainbow, there'd be a pot of gold, basically. And so the Ukrainians, with a false sense of security, goaded the Russians. And I think that the tipping point was when President Zelensky at the Munich summit said that it would be great for Ukraine to have nuclear weapons. And none of the European leaders or the American leaders there, Kamala Harris, who was there, gave any pushback to such an insane idea. And I think that that turned out to be the trigger. Dmitry Peskov, who's the second in command at the foreign ministry, at the Russian foreign ministry, seems to have indicated that a couple of days ago. At the time that it happened, I was like, Jesus Christ, are you out of your mind to have Ukraine be a nuclear power? And Peskov, like I said, a couple of days ago, I think it was Saturday afternoon, essentially confirmed that that was the approximate trigger for this invasion. And from the point of view of the Russians, what I find is that the Western media does not show the point of view of the Russians. They act as if the Russians, for no reason whatsoever, decided to attack Ukraine. And what happened, of course, is that from the point of view of the Russians, this is the same as the Cuban Missile Crisis. The Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, The Soviet Union parked a bunch of intermediate range nuclear weapons on Cuban soil, right in front of the United States, right on the United States' front doorstep. And John Kennedy essentially threatened nuclear war over these missiles because it undermined the doctrine of mutually assured destruction, which I'm sure you'll get into with your audience later on. I don't want to go into the whole explanation of it.
Well, you've done an amazing review of this in some of your videos I've seen already. There's a parallel to be made. And there's been a kind of oppression going on in Ukraine against the ethnically Russian since 2004, at least.
You have to understand the Zelensky regime is not a democratic regime in the sense of holding up civil liberties. They have no problem with shutting down news sources that don't agree with their line. Shutting down ethnic Russian news sources, also persecuting political opposition. Now, the political opponents that they persecute are not particularly savory characters. I mean, they're not angels, right? But I mean, if you're claiming to be all democratic and good and, you know, with Western values and all this bullshit, then, well, live up to that. Don't, you know, Zelensky is no angel. I personally find him really despicable for handing out weapons to civilians. It's only going to cause civilian casualties for no reason. And so what's going on right now is, you know, the Zelensky regime poked the Russians and the Russians responded, and in a way that makes complete sense. In fact, I would argue that it has been a remarkably restrained invasion. I'm talking to you now on crystal clear internet. If the Russians wanted to destroy Ukraine, I would not be here with electricity, running water, you know, food and all the rest of it. The whole place would be bombed out if that's what the Russians wanted. This invasion has been extremely fast. People don't seem to understand the speed with which mechanized warfare takes place. To move tanks and troops to take over a country is not, it's not like, you know, a lazy stroll in the afternoon. It takes days and weeks. And the fact that in four full days, we are now at, about 98 hours since the start of the invasion, just under 100 hours. And they have surrounded Kharkov. I haven't gotten the word yet. I'm reaching out to contacts in Kharkov to see where Russian troops are, but they have surrounded it. They are proximate to surround Kiev. They are marching very decisively towards Dnipro. You know, the Russians are winning. They are clearly winning. And I understand that a lot of Ukrainians find this impossible to accept, and they're extremely angry at it. And they might, you know, want to beat the shit out of me for pointing it out, but it's the truth. I'm not saying this to diminish anyone's heroism or bravery. I'm not saying it to crap on anybody, but it's the truth. You look at a map and the Russians have advanced faster than the Americans advanced in 2003 when they invaded Iraq. This is an unprecedented invasion in terms of speed, decisiveness, and effectiveness. And most important of all, it's been achieved with relatively little damage to the country overall. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we should be thankful for that at least, because this is not going to be, you know, like the Lebanese Civil War, where Beirut was completely annihilated and turned into rubble, or the same that happened in a lot of the cities of Iraq, I mean, countless cities in Iraq. That's what the Americans did, which was just destroy everything. But the Russians clearly have very different motivations. Political decisions have been made to ensure that the country in and of itself, the civilian population, is relatively well treated in this war, because it's a war, it's an invasion, it's not a police action or any Russian bullshit in that regard. And the Russians have been destabilizing eastern Ukraine for the past 8 years deliberately, just to you know, prevent Ukraine from joining NATO. But the events over the last 4 months, roughly, ever since Jake Sullivan started floating the lie that the Russians were building up, were amassing an invasion force, when he started telling that lie in October for U.S. domestic policy reasons of his own, political reasons of his own, that, you know, he destabilized the situation in Ukraine. And, well, here we are. And from my perspective, looking at the map, looking at verified sources, not Russian sources, the Russians are actually keeping fairly quiet as to what they're doing. They're just doing it.
Because they're not trying to win the war on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They are. The Ukrainians are winning the information war. The Russians are winning the actual war. And between those two wars, only one really matters. And so I would expect that the Russians, at the pace that they are going, they will capture eastern and central Ukraine likely within the next week. And within another week or so, they'll capture the western rump of Ukraine. And that'll be that. I mean, you know, the old 4chan mean, 2 more weeks. Yeah, but I think it will be 2 more weeks, to tell you the truth.
Well, that's also what I see. But it depends on what the West does, because the West could be feeding so much to the resistance that they could give eventually technical troubles to Putin.
No, not really, because the so-called resistance are militarily without any training. And so they're not going to be any kind of effective force. They are going to cause, the only thing that they will cause, the so-called resistance, these civilians with weapons, the only thing that they will cause is the photo opportunity for the Ukrainian regime, which is really despicable. I mean, it's just despicable to create this situation. And I am deliberately calling them a regime at this point and not a legitimate government because of the actions that they have been carrying out. The same way that you and I have spoken previously of the Biden regime, that, you know, we just, you and I, JF, we're on the same page that a lot of these regimes in the so-called Western democracies are illegitimate because they are unresponsive to the will of the people. We talk about the Trudeau regime, which is, mm-hmm. you know, it's authoritarian. It's despicable and disgusting. The Zelensky regime trying to put people in harm's way deliberately so they can continue to win the information war. That's just despicable. That's just wrong. They are putting heavy duty weapons, howitzers and such, in the middle of densely populated areas deliberately so as to draw Russian fire that will cause civilian casualties. That is despicable. That is evil. It should be called out.
10 years ago, we were calling this out for terrorism, for Islam defenders that were doing that. They were just living with their wives and children in their freaking house, and we were descending on there with squads and with heavy weaponry and killing everyone. And then we were saying, oh, yeah, but he hid behind his wife, so we had no choice but to kill the wife. And that's exactly what the Zelensky regime has decided to do with the whole civilian population. Well, let's say the male population, who he has forced to stay inside the country so that he could recruit them.
Yeah, now, well, it's not recruiting them. Makes it sound as if the people have agency. He's forcibly conscripting people. I know first-hand accounts that the Zelensky regime is having the police go onto buses that are fleeing the various cities and forcibly conscript anybody who looks between the ages of 18 and 60. And apparently now that they've even removed the upper end of the age bracket, it's just anybody who looks like a man, like a full-grown man, you know, boys of 16, 17 years old who, I mean, we know because we were 16 and 17 that we might look like men, but we're fucking children. And they're just grabbing them off buses and pressing them into service. And this is absolutely wrong. If Gaddafi had done this in Libya, we would have been outraged. But the Zelensky regime is doing it, and everybody's like very la-di-da about it. It's fucking wrong. It's fucking wrong to take people. And also, by the way, this points to the fact that the Zelensky regime knows that it's losing, because the last time I heard that somebody just randomly pressed individuals into military service like Zelensky regime is doing now, it was, I hate to say it, you know, the guy with the H in his last name in 1945 when Berlin was falling. Okay, that was the last time this kind of thing happened, or that I'm aware of. I'm sure it happened other times, but you get my point. It's the move of a regime that is desperate and falling apart. And I think that they are doing all of this because they are trying at all costs to wrangle in the Western democracies, the Americans, the Europeans, into fighting for the Zelensky regime. And the thing is, this could lead to a horrifying consequence. And the Putin regime has made it clear that they are willing to use nuclear weapons to prevent a outside power from interfering in this war. They have said so. On the day of the invasion, Putin, clearly as a representative of his regime, said to the world that if any outside force interfered, the consequences would be catastrophic and world historical. I forget the exact wording. You can look it up and use it. But it was very clear it was a euphemism for nuclear weapons. Yeah, they're not fucking around.
Absolutely. And so Zelensky, if he didn't do this, he would have lost the war probably within 24 hours or something. Essentially, his forces could have been bombarded by the air and there would be nothing left. So Zelensky needed the civilians in there. He kind of bet them like a chip on the table at the casino.
No, that's not quite accurate. You see, the initial invasion and so far, the civilians have not really participated in any kind of combat. Okay, because it takes time to cycle people in, to grab them off the street, put them in some kind of uniform and put a weapon in their hand and send them to the front, as it were. You have to understand also, there is no front in this war. Because the Russian strategy has been very clear. It's probe and retreat. They go to a city, they probe to see where the weaknesses are. When they come across any kind of resistance, Ukrainian army resistance, they pull back. And so that's why it's given the false sense of security to the Ukrainians that they are winning this war. Because whenever they encounter the Russians, when the Russians are trying to take over a city, the Russians will probe and push forward until they meet real resistance. And these skirmishes, small arms fire, occasional shelling, this will indicate to the Russians to pull back. And with that, they pull back and surround. And so what happens is that from the point of view of the Ukrainian defenders, it seems as if they are repelling Russian invaders. But what's actually going on is that the Russians, of their own free will, are pulling back so that they can realize, oh, this is a point of resistance. Let's pull back and surround. And that's the strategy that they've been employing in all the major cities so far. Kharkov and Kiev, they are, like I said earlier, they have surrounded Kharkov, and they are in the process of surrounding Kiev. Last news I heard yesterday was that the northwestern highway had been cut by the Russians, and the Russians were moving decisively to interdict the western highway. The mayor Klitschko said that the famous boxer, he let slip yesterday night to an AP reporter who's actually staying here apparently in this hotel, let slip that Kiev was surrounded. Okay, and that nobody was going to be able to get out. Later, he walked that back and pretended that he hadn't really said it, but he didn't really deny it. And that seems to be the case. Now, nobody can leave Kiev, where I am now. So that's what's going on right now.
So if you do feel the possibility of a nuclear conflict, or at least massive arms being used against Kiev, would you fear for your safety, your personal safety?
Well, no, because there's nothing I can do about it. See? And fear is an emotion that matters when you have some, actual control. I mean, fight or flight. Fight, I mean, when you see a threat of some sort, you either fight or flight. And if you fight it, you think that you can resist it and succeed. When you flee from it, it's because you realize that it's too big for you. But in my case, in particular, I realize if they drop a nuclear weapon in Kiev, man, I'm going to be vaporized. So I'm not really particularly worried. It'll happen before I even realize it's happened. I suppose that's a fatalistic approach, but it's really kind of allowing fear to dominate your existence, especially in a time like this. It's just stupid. I mean, you have to control yourself. You have to be a man, not be some fucking pussy who like, oh, my feelings, and I'm so scared, and all the emotions running through my heart. Oh, my heart is beating. What a fucking faggotry is that, man? Fuck that.
Well,
course I'm scared. I'll tell you right now, I'm scared for my children who are in Kharkov. I'm very scared for them, but this is a hard reality that you have to face, that there is nothing to be done. I cannot change anything at this time. I'm stuck here in this fucking hotel. It's a lovely hotel, but goddamn, I hate being in here. But that's it. There's nothing to be done. And all I can do, quite frankly, is wait and see how this all plays out. So, yeah.
So we've heard sirens being deployed, but when we hear the sirens and we look at the live stream of Kiev, it seems that the bombardments and the action happens outside the city very much, and that
yes,
your area exactly is probably not being targeted at all. But do you hear the sirens?
Very far away, very, very distantly. And very, very distantly, I'll hear the sound of some shelling once in a while. It's very, very distant, okay? The strategy, like I said, the Russian strategy is to encircle these cities and to bottle them up. The Russians in the east, southeast of the country, they're about to capture 45,000 Ukrainian soldiers. That's roughly 20% of the men that they have under arms. They're about to capture them. Okay, it's the way it's looking now. It seems to be inevitable. And this
when
is
you say
Western...
southwest, do you mean close to Kiev?
Excuse me. Southeast. No, south.
Okay, southeast.
No, close to Lugansk and Donetsk. My mistake. I'm a bit tired. Close to Lugansk and Donetsk. That's the word I'm getting as of this morning, as of midnight Kiev time. And so it seems that that is kind of like inevitability. And once that group of soldiers is captured, 45,000 soldiers is a huge chunk of your army. And, you know, that's it. You know, I mean, yeah, come on, it's over. Okay. And so that seems to be in progress. The Russians are linking up between the forces that invaded at Kharkov and the forces that invaded from Lugansk and the forces that invaded from Odessa, from Crimea, rather. And so not Odessa, Crimea. And so it seems that the Russians are going to link up, and they're employing a strategy that I've used multiple times, which is the famous cauldron, which is where, you know, like in the south, they attack a force, and the force is here, right? They attack it, and at the same time, they have forces that encircle it. Mm-hmm. And so all of it, they cover the cauldron. And so they have, like, here, the enemy force. And below, the Russians are attacking. And the enemy force here is, like, pushing down, but they don't realize that they're cut off. And then all of a sudden, it's over. Okay. And they've used this tactic multiple times. It's one of their favorite military strategies, on-the-ground infantry strategies. And they're using it, apparently, very effectively. I think that there will be a great battle where the Russians realize, where the Ukrainians rather realize this, and they try to, you know, please forgive me that I can't draw it, but the forces realize that they're being outflanked on two sides, and they try to pull out. Mm-hmm. And at that point, when the pincers come together, that is the point of the battle. And we'll see if the Ukrainians can manage to hold off, but I doubt it. I think that the fact that the Russians have, they have complete air superiority. I mean, I understand from a propagandistic point of view that the Ukrainians are claiming no, that they don't, and they push the narrative that the Russians don't have air superiority. They do. They own the sky. And in modern in modern combat, if you own the sky, that's it. That's the end of the game. And so the Ukrainians are constantly pushing, and they had this lie about the ghost of Kiev, this ace that shot, you know.
At first I was about to ask, did you see the ghost of Kiev fly down your window to check you out? But he went too fast, and now we can't film it. That's the ghost of Kiev. He's too fast. But air superiority could...
He's a ghost. He's a ghost.
He's a ghost. So, yeah, he's too fast.
You know, the ghost you can't see. Yeah. Look, I got to go. I have to go, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'll, you know, later on when it's morning in your time, I'd love to be on again and shoot the breeze in a more relaxed atmosphere. Right now, it's breakfast time and food
absolutely.
Is available.
Absolutely. No problem. Go breakfast. Especially in a siege town. I don't want to deprive you of your justly obtain share of breakfast. So Coach Red Pill, thank you so much for calling. Bye bye.
Take it easy.
Well, what a guy this Coach Red Pill. Sorry for the people who were experiencing this live and there were some hiccups. It was all on my side, actually. Coach Red Pill has a great internet there. It's a testament to the fact that civilian infrastructures are very little affected right now in Kiev, and that Coach Red Pill was able to just connect with us. But I guess that in a city under siege, as I was mentioning, you know, they may be starting to think about long-term resistance and feeding, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of people or millions. And so Coach Red Pill, unfortunately, told me before the show began, I can't do the showtime anymore because my breakfast is like scheduled and I have to go get my ration. So so I had to move the show in emergency sooner. So we did what we could. But yeah, so it doesn't seem... it's true, you know, when you're dealing with such a thing as a nuclear threat or the potential that you will be used, that your death will be used as part of a bargaining chip in the concert of nations, there's really nothing you can do about it. So in a way, he's extremely zen about it. He's adopting the right attitude. And yeah, I think it's going to be fine. I wanted to ask him about the peace process that has been starting. I believe those discussions on both sides are not engaged in with much energy. I think that Putin is so committed into Ukraine. It would be surprising to me that he would go at the table willing to do concessions. And Zelensky is so committed in his speech and in his in the political image that he displays. I think he may be starting to take pleasure in this kind of success, this kind of image of him as a member of a resistance movement. And so I think that on both sides, there may not be genuine interest at negotiating. Although one bargaining chip might be the fact that Putin may have never wanted Kyiv to begin with. It's possible that the whole approach of the North is not with the goal of dominating Ukraine as a whole, and perhaps Putin wanted to accomplish a couple of military goals in the South, and he may be just happy with those and therefore willing to negotiate because he wouldn't care about the concession of Kyiv. We'll see. We'll see what happens with this. Certainly the tensions are high. People are rooting for war. It's like, it reminds me back in the days of the whole rooting for war in the Middle East. After September, after 9/11, and the other wars for which there also has been psyop and pushing for war internationally. And one thing that Coach Red Pill said about the air dominance, I wanted to ask him about it, but he had to go too quick. But I was, I think that the air dominance question could change relatively quick. If other countries are willing to give support, like we have seen the European Union has committed to giving some jets. Now, will these jets directly interface with Russian troops, or will they be more jets for surveillance or for defense operations? It's going to become extremely complex, because what will be the behavior of the Russian army with respect to these jets? Will they try to take them down? What will be the behavior of these jets with respect to the Russian army? Will they take down convoys, sections, or whatever? Or maybe some defenses or some missile launchers? It's becoming extremely complex, extremely quick, and we'll be following this every day on JFG Tonight. Now I'm going to sleep because it's already 1 a.m. Eastern Time. And I thank you all for joining us. And I'll make sure that I re-upload the video so that the hiccups of the stream don't show up in the final version. So if you've missed some parts of the stream, you can just re-watch the video. Sprocket says, Russia is to the alt-right what black people are to leftists. They have no agency, no responsibility. They don't do things. Instead, circumstances make them do things. They are spoken about. Okay, so they are spoken about in a way that is non-agentic. It's a bizarre comparison because, there is some sanctification of race in the left in the US that is not present in how the right on the internet discusses Russia. So I don't think that your comparison works here. I don't adore Russia. I don't sanctify Russia in the way leftists, for example, have sanctified the Black Lives Matter movement. Skatey says, is it over? I thought we were just starting. I had to start the stream in emergency speed because Coach Red Pill wasn't able to make it, because there are strict hours that he has to meet to be able to get his breakfast. So I'm totally willing to adjust my schedule to the needs of war. You know, we're talking to someone who lives at the heart of potentially the beginning of World War III. Although he gave his view on this at the beginning, that it's kind of a propagandist take, but still, I mean, it's It's as much tension worldwide between all of the great powers that we've ever observed in our lifetime, I believe. So I made the show earlier. Aim says NATO provoked this war. It's so crystal clear. Ukraine couldn't be allowed to enter into NATO and park nuclear weapons on Russia's border. They knew from 2008 invasion of Georgia that this would happen. Zelensky shouldn't have spoken so openly about developing nuclear weapons. Exactly, which is why my read of Joe Biden from the beginning of this crisis is that each of the things that he has done and each of the things that he has said have been an open invitation for Putin to do the invasion. So he wanted it to happen. I still haven't figured out why he wanted it to happen. Why he wanted it to be so painful for Ukraine. I think that in the end, when all settles down, we'll be able to look back and extrapolate what were the goals of Joe Biden. But one thing that I've been consistent about since 2 weeks, since the beginning of the crisis, even before this became an active conflict, I said this clearly: the Democrats are excited. This is the next COVID. This is the next war they really want it to happen. That I can tell you for sure. Why they want it to happen? There may be a mix of interest here. Maybe some economic gains, maybe some corruption opportunities at the international level, maybe some just a desire to go back to Cold War days or even worse than Cold War, so that we can prop up the state contracts with the military industrial complex. All of this could very well constitute reasons. Go away says, JF, did CRP talk about the arms distributed to citizens? Any developments there? Did CRP pick up an AK? He might need it if the Ukrainian... I will not mention such hypotheses. All I can say for now is that Coach Red Pill seems to be healthy. He doesn't seem to be forced against his will to do much. So that seems to be an okay situation for now. But just for the protection of people and myself, I will be removing your description of an hypothesis. So that is it for tonight, boys. I'm going to sleep. It was great to speak to our friend, and we'll speak to him again. Bye-bye. Thank you.